Welcome back to issue 13 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that knows with great power comes a free set of steak knives. I'm one of your co-hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your other co-host, David McVeigh. Hello, Richard. How are you?
I'm incredibly well, David. According to our show notes, this is the part where we exchange pleasantries.
pleasantry. Or we could actually do... Oh, no. Stop! Soundboard's gone crazy!
What a scoop!
Soundboard's gone crazy! Stop! You're a bad soundboard. Bad soundboard. That's not what I was going to play.
Oh, my
I was going to play... I was going to play...
I'm getting into.
I was going to play this.
You're not even interesting enough to make me sick.
There you go. There's pleasantries for you. All right, so I apologize for all of that. And one day I'm just going to start hitting numbers on the soundboard and just see what randomly comes up. I think I just did that, actually.
I'm just going to tell people what they should expect other than random numbers.
Okay, you tell them that.
Okay, I'm going to tell them that this week DC fights famine in Africa. Comics get recognized as the GLAAD Awards and train your kids to be like Hellboy.
What?
Yes! Then, is it possible that Spider-Man could make a cameo in the Avengers?
No.
Also, what's happened to the Powers TV series? Plus our kick-ass pick, or should we say picks, of the week as we explore Marvel's stealth reboots of Daredevil, The Avenging Spider-Man, Punisher, and Ghost Rider, and maybe a few more. But first...
Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
But first, after that vintage clip, let's play this week's vintage clip.
I love your vintage clips.
Arraignment cannot proceed until you tell the court your real name.
I'm sorry, I can't.
You leave me no choice. Remove his mask.
No, don't do it!
Stop that spider! Stop that man!
Oh, brother, what am I gonna do now?
Stop!
Matt Murdock. Boy, am I glad to see my friendly neighborhood lawyer.
I can only delay matters for so long, Spider-Man. Sooner or later, they're going to learn your real identity.
They can't. I can't explain why, but they can't.
Someday, Spidey may learn that his blind lawyer, Matt Murdock, is really the famous superhero, Daredevil.
Believe me, I understand. I'll do what I can. But in the meantime, you'll have to go to jail.
How ironic, considering what actually happened to Matt Murdock.
Absolutely. So that's why I was amazed to find that clip. That was from 1983, from an animated... It sounds older, but it's 1983. It's from the animated series Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, and that was an episode called Attack of the Arachnoid, another guy injected himself with... spider serum to give himself Spider-Man's powers and went off and framed Spider-Man for a bunch of crimes. There's a scene in there. You'll have to look up. We'll put the link in the show notes, but there's a scene in there where it's like, but Dr. Zoltan, how do you know that he was bitten by a radioactive spider and turned into Spider-Man? There couldn't be any other way.
My question is, how many Spider-Man animated series were there?
Stacks.
They seem to keep pulling them out of the woodwork here.
Yeah, I know. There's at least half a dozen, I think, that I'm aware of.
And the other question is, how many of these did Stan Lee actually narrate?
Yeah, exactly. He's did narration for all of them. Little did he know that Spider-Man invented the Beagle.
I reckon they should just put him on Jersey Shore and be done with it. You know?
Snooki is making her move.
Oh, dear Richard.
I think it's marvelous.
Well,
Excelsior, Jersey kids.
Did you ever see, speaking of Stan Lee, did you ever see the I use the term very, very loosely, please, Who Wants to Be a Superhero?
No, it
was a reality show where they had contestants who got together and they like did tasks and stuff to see who could actually, and the winner actually got to be in a real comic book.
Oh, wow.
And Stan Lee was like their host all the way through it. And he ended every episode with Excelsior.
I think that's just marvelous, David.
They made two seasons of that show.
Two?
Two.
Wow. So that's two comic book characters they got out of that.
They did, but none of them ever went on to anything.
No.
No.
Of them, OMAC.
It's about that quality, can I say? No, actually, one of them even got to appear in the first year. The winner actually even got to appear in a sci-fi TV show. Sci-fi channel TV show, and everybody was like, wow, he's going to get a TV show. No. That's not actually what they said. They said he got to appear in a sci-fi TV. So he actually appeared in, what was it? It was Mega Snake or something like that, or Superconda or something as a cameo, where he's on stage basically going, hey, look at me, and then the thing comes out and attacks him.
Excellent.
Yeah. It's like, wow, that's it, really?
That would be, for me, I'd call that success. To actually have been in like a Mega Shark versus Giant Prawn sort of movie.
Giant Prawn.
Roger Corman, I'm trademarking that.
Oh, hold on.
Little Panda Hopper.
I think we should make the Mega Duck movie. There you go.
Giant Prawn versus Mega Duck.
All right. Well, I think now that I preempted everything before, I think we should try again. What do you think? And we'll play this.
What a scoop!
What's new in the world of comic books, Richard?
Well, it's interesting you should mention the world, because that's we are the world, David.
we are the
children.
We're
the ones to make a better place. So let's start building or something. Yeah, well, basically, DC, this was rumored this was going to happen this week, but DC and Warner made a major announcement this week that they're launching a new campaign called We Can Be Heroes. And it's basically, they're calling it an unprecedented giving campaign to fight the hunger crisis in the Horn of Africa. Basically, it's a new campaign to do just that. It's raising awareness of the famine crisis in the Horn of Africa, and they're actually using characters from the DC universe: Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, The Flash, Aquaman, and Cyborg, issuing the call to action: We Can Be Heroes. I've got a little bit of. They released a 2-minute trailer to go with it, and I've just pulled out a little bit of a clip. From the campaign. So, do you want to have a listen to that?
Yeah, play it.
I just went.
When? Where? How? What do we need to do?
It felt very exhilarating to sort of have that feeling of being a hero.
I felt like I was necessary. So I fell to the ground with her and just laid right next to her. And she go, why did you do that for? And I said, because someone needs to be on the ground with you so I could help you up.
Now, that's just a little a clip from it. It's all about personal stories in this thing, because the whole idea is, what can you do to make a difference?
Can I just tell you, it sounds really earnest.
It's very earnest. Like, yeah. The first half of the video is them just all saying, well, I had the opportunity to do something and I didn't do anything. And then the second half of it's all stories like that. Little things that you did that made a difference. Now, I love the artwork. You were saying before that you like it too. They just used this silhouetted artwork of all the major DC heroes.
The artwork is hot. I'd like to actually get a shot of just that graphic without the writing.
Yeah.
And actually have that as my wallpaper on my iPad. That's awesome.
That would be very cool. No, I'd love that in the background. We could probably Photoshop out the writing.
Ah, I'm sure you can. I'm sure I will, in fact.
In fact, that's exactly what I'm going to do. What's really interesting, I found that they actually used the new DC Entertainment logo on that. And they're using it's called DC Entertainment on there, not DC Comics.
Well, apparently it's two divisions.
It is two divisions, but they're using the same brand new logo for that.
Yeah.
And you were saying, David, before the show started, that you've seen or you've heard that it's going to be animated, the DC logo.
Yeah, Steven Schleicher from MajorSpoilers.com, we talked about Major Spoilers last week, he was on the podcast, The Morning Stream, this morning, and he was talking about the fact that he's seen it animated now. And he said it actually looks pretty hot animated. Apparently the D actually peels back to reveal the colored C underneath. So he says it actually looks pretty good. I'm waiting to see it myself. Apparently, the new iPad, DC iPad app will carry the animated logo.
And I wonder if we'll see that at the start of things like The Dark Knight Rises.
I would imagine so. That's the next big DC property coming out.
It is.
If you remember, I believe the last DC logo, didn't that launch with Batman Begins?
Yes, it did.
Yeah,
right.
That was the first time we saw it.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to see that with Dark Knight. It's funny how it begins and ends with Dark Knight.
Yeah. As all things do,
I guess. Look, I love the logo. I think it's a worthy cause. I just think it sounds very earnest. But, you know, all charity stuff always does.
Yeah, it is a very serious thing. And I think, I mean, look, you know, being cynical, I'd say they're launching the new logo with the campaign because they want to attach a serious, you know, message to their otherwise loathed new logo.
Although I would actually say one thing about the use of the new logo on this poster. It's a really nice poster and it's got really nice graphics. Can you just look at this poster again, Richard, and tell me how much focus did they put on this new logo by actually having the page peeling back away from it? And they really want you to look at that logo.
Yeah, no, they really do. And look, to be fair, this is the first corporate thing that they put it on, and this is a big worldwide event that they're doing, so this is a major thing. Look, as you said, this isn't the first time DC have done this kind of campaign. Back in the 80s, I believe it was, they did a sort of fight the famine issue, and there's a famous issue that you can find. It was a special they did that was Superman trying to battle hunger in Africa. So there's been a long tradition of comics doing these campaigns, but I think this is the first time that it's been DC with Warner behind them actually doing a multi-million-dollar campaign over the course of 2 years. And they've basically said here, consumers can make donations, which DC Entertainment will match 100% up to $1 million in donation. So basically, it's going to be $2 million.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, they can afford it after the New 52.
Exactly. They've had a good year.
They got a bit of money in the bank right now, so we'll see how it all turns out. All right, what's next?
Okay, well, the next story is kind of in the same spirit of harmony, which is GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, has released the annual awards nominees. And I took this story from just comicbook.com. It's a blog. And they were saying that there's, you know, there's a whole lot of different categories that are on that nominations. There's film, television, documentary, even newspaper articles make it on this year. But they've also included comic books on here, which is not the first time they've done this. But you know, most of the nominees on here come from Marvel and DC. And I just thought it'd be interesting to note a few of the nominations that have come out from that. The nominees are Marvel, The Avengers, The Children's Crusade, which features openly gay and actively dating teenage characters Hulking and Wiccan from The Young Avengers.
Yep.
Also from Marvel's X-Factor, which also includes a male-to-male romance between longtime characters Richter and Shatterstar. And two other nominees from the award come from DC Comics, Batwoman, of course, featuring the adventures of Kate Kane, who actually they describe, I think, in the book as a proud lesbian woman.
Yeah.
There's also, they say The Secret Six, which featured an interesting relationship between the villains Scandal Savage and former Fury of Apocalypse Knockout. And last but not least is Veronica Presents Kevin Keller, which comes courtesy of Archie Comics. The company has been expanding the diversity and inclusion of current events over the past 2 or 3 years to the eventual inclusion of a gay character with no surprise. So,
actually, I am surprised. I'm surprised that Archie Comics is that daring.
Well, what was a story we were looking at last week when Fox News was holding Archie Comics up as the as the great conservative white hope?
That's right. Now, well, not anymore.
Oh. Sorry, Fox. They've moved into the neighborhood.
You know, the problem is that Fox doesn't actually read comics, so they have no idea what's going on.
No, no. They based it on, I think, you know, some forum or someone's Tumblr.
Somebody's Tumblr.
Yeah. So, look, I thought it was interesting. That was just one of the stories that's come out this week.
That's cool. I think that's really good. I think that's cool.
And I always like seeing I love awards lists to start with, but I always love to see
yes, I know we do. I know you do.
Yeah, exactly. But I always love to see lists that, you know, celebrate the diversity of comics as well and not just, you know, best penciler, best inker.
I think that's really cool. I think it's really good that the Gay and Lesbian – I also think it's really cool the Gay and Lesbian Alliance – Against Defamation has actually recognized comics as being basically a viable art form.
Exactly, yeah. And it'd be nice if other larger organizations did the same. So.
I think it's fantastic. All right.
Now this third story.
Yeah, now the headline has got my attention. I haven't read it yet, so please tell me.
Well, the headline is Kids Train to be Hellboy at Dark Horse's official BPRD camp.
Pardon?
Yes. Well, I've taken this one from the Comics Alliance, and I did a double take on it as well. But the program's open to children ages 9 to 17, which, as this author says, is so unfair. They said, to quote from the article, in what is unquestionably one of the coolest comic book licensing deals, Dark Horse Comics has partners with Trackers Earth Outdoor Education Camping Outfit to create the official BPID training camp. So apparently the program includes tactical training in survival, martial arts, weaponry, forensics, folklore and mythology, potions, charms, telepathy, not sure how they did that one, physiology of monsters and gadgets of the occult.
And also identifying edible plants and herbs, boating, woodworking, wildlife tracking, and parents, if you're really lucky, you get your kids back.
And apparently they have to apply all these skills to help solve a local legend at the end of it. So,
oh, really? What yeah. local legend would that be, do you think?
It was the legend of Adolf Ashkoff.
Pardon?
The legend of Adolf Ashkoff.
Yeah, okay, I'll say that again. Pardon? What is an Adolf Ashkoff when he's at home?
Well, apparently, according to Wikipedia, which is now back with us after their blackout earlier last week, Adolf Ashkoff, who was born in May 21st, 1849, and died sometime in 1930, was a homesteader in the U.S. state of Oregon in the late 19th century. He established the community of Marmot, Oregon, in the western foothills of Mount Hood in the late 19th century. Most of the buildings burned down in 1931.
Huh. Okay. They're going to try and track this guy.
Well, I don't know what's so mysterious about him.
Hey, it seems like we know everything about him.
He's got a fairly extensively well-footed...
maybe that's like Bigfoot. Maybe he's just wandering around in the woods out there somewhere, you know?
You must find another footnote for Wikipedia.
There's the mystery for you.
That's the mystery. And why did Wikipedia go dark?
Oh, dear. All right. I think that's cool. Do you want to go be a Hellboy camp? No, he's shaking his head.
No,
it's too adventurous for him.
Hey, now
he's nodding.
Before we move on to movie news,
yes,
I realized I've skipped a section. I haven't talked about what we've been reading this week.
Oh my god, you're absolutely right. How did we miss that?
And we've been reading Stacks this week.
And do you know what?
It's really dark in here.
Yeah, there you go. That's how we.
I'm
that's
never
how.
Live that down.
That's how we missed it. No, you're never going to live that down. I love it. What have we been reading this week? Oh, well, look, I've got to tell you, after you talked to me last week, I actually went and read, aside from the fact that I read a crap load of Marvel comics this week.
Oh, yeah.
which we'll come back to in our pick of the week. But I actually read all of the Dead Man up to the most recent issue.
Mm.
And I really liked it. I actually had trouble getting into the first issue way back 5 months ago.
Yeah.
I sat down and buckled down and actually watched it. And I got to tell you that I think it's issue 4 where he talks to basically the devil.
That's awesome.
Is brilliant. It is as well written, I think, as the Sandman scene.
Absolutely what I was thinking when I was reading it. Yeah.
It's terrific. It's terrific, and it's well worth having a read. So I really enjoyed that. I also read, we're not going to cover it in great detail in the picks, so I'll talk about it now, but I also read all of the most recent run of Ghost Rider.
As did I, yeah.
Which I'm not so hot on.
Let's just say it up front, Ghost Rider in space.
Yeah, well, yeah, it goes beyond that. It does go beyond that. I like the fact that he has a space motorbike.
Yeah. No, I like the fact that he goes in and demands a space motorbike.
Yes, I need a space motorbike from Mephisto. Mephisto's like, no. Look, I just think that it's gone into a direction that I don't know if it's a direction I want it to go in. No. I like Johnny Blaze as Ghost Rider. And the fact
I should say it's not the same Ghost Rider. It's someone else's Ghost
and
Rider.
I got to say, the next few issues might be interesting because she's finally come to terms with the fact that she needs Blaze. And now that he's kind of part of it, it might be more interesting. Because the first few issues were basically a girl has now been given the powers of Ghost Rider, and she's out of control, basically.
Exactly right.
And Johnny Blaze has been basically asked by Mephisto to track her down and train her because...
Well, she lobotomized a huge section of South America.
Well, exactly. And by taking their sin away. So Mephisto has basically said, there's no way you can ever be Ghost Rider again to Johnny Blaze, but nobody understands the power like him because he was the longest Ghost Rider in history. You know what I mean?
That's right.
He'd been it for so long. He can control it. He knows it. And so Mephisto goes to him and says, I need you to go and control her. And Johnny Blaze is like, get stuffed. But in the end...
So how long do you give it until he's back?
Half a dozen issues.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to last more than half a dozen issues unless he becomes Ghost Rider again.
Yeah.
Or they do something really interesting with it.
It's interesting because there's seven issues in and he's... I've read ahead.
Yeah.
And he's still not... Ghost Rider. So.
I've read the same seven issues as you, and
yeah.
The last issue, she's finally basically said, I need you.
Yeah.
So now it's like the series finally starts. And if a series that takes seven issues to get started is a bit of an issue.
It is a worry. No, it's an absolute worry, which I think it's the opposite. And we'll talk about this a bit more later. It's sort of the complete opposite to Daredevil and Avenging Spider-Man,
yeah.
Which... throw you in at the deep end.
The other thing I read this week was I read the reboot of Punisher. We'll come back to that in the pick because it is kind of related to what we're talking about in the pick of the week, which of course is the new run of Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't connect yet, but the we've already did the story last week where we said there is actually a crossover coming between Punisher, Avenging Spider-Man, and Daredevil. So. I think it's fair to say let's save it and we'll talk about it within that universe because it all seems to be belonging. I don't think there'll be a crossover with Ghost Rider, so I don't think there's any worry there.
No, there's hints being dropped in all of them, though.
Yeah, there was something else I read in the New 52 that I read and I thought was really interesting, and my mind has gone blank. What have you been reading?
Look, I've read many of the same things that you have, partly because we're covering some of this week. I've caught up on a fair chunk of the New 52. Look, I'm conclusively willing to say that I'm giving up on Batwing, I think, at this point.
Oh, I gave up on him a couple of issues ago.
Look, I gave it five issues and I still can't get into it. But look, you know, I've started reading a bit of Captain America and I'm liking what they're doing with that.
Right.
It's sort of...
That's his new reboot as well.
At least the first issue of that of the new run, and there's seven issues into that, goes back and forth between the 1940s and modern day. Mm-hmm. And there's something that happened in the 1940s is a mystery that's presenting itself today. So I'm liking what they're doing there. Like you, I finished reading the first eight issues of Daredevil, which is just fabulous. I think it's one of the best books being written at the moment.
Right.
But we'll talk about that certainly in more depth later. As I said, I think I mentioned this in the last show, but I've read almost all of the Bat books to date, and Batman is the book just called Batman is looking fantastic. I read Grifter.
I gave up on that after two issues. Oh,
that is terrible.
It's
awful. That's really bad. I don't know. It's like just another one of the 700 super spy books that they've got out there. Of another organization running around.
And it makes you really wonder what DC was thinking when they put together the New 52.
It's like they came up with 47 and had,
they had a couple left over and said, well, let's make an OMAC and a Grifter and a...
I'm surprised it's going... Blackhawks is going and this is staying.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm surprised that... Grifter is surviving. I'm surprised that Blue Beetle is surviving.
Actually, Blue Beetle's doing good stuff.
I don't know. I read the first five, first four. First
really?
Four or five.
I was liking it. I was hooked by about the third one.
The fifth
one's quite funny.
Okay, I'll read five and I'll have a look. As I say, Dead Man impressed me. It's actually DC Comics Presents. We should be giving it its proper title.
Yeah, so. DC Comics Presents Dead Man.
I'm surprised that Frankenstein of Shade is still going. Look, it's actually better than OMAC, but it's still not a quality book.
No, but I've noticed a lot of them are starting to cross over.
Yeah, Hawk and Dove, I'm surprised, is still going. And I tell you, the one that really is like this little comic book in the background that nobody ever talks about, and I'm surprised it's still around, and I can't believe that it's actually one of the New 52, is iVampire.
Yeah, I noticed there was in the back of one of the issues I was reading this week, it said, iVampire is coming to Gotham City. So I think they're either getting very desperate, or there's going to be, they're setting up that series. Yeah,
either it's pre-planned
or crossover.
Crossovers either mean something very clever or signs of desperation. So
yeah, or both.
Or both.
Clever desperation.
Men of War is going. I don't know why they brought that back. Look. Sergeant Rock, back in the 70s, was a fun comic book. But it's a thing of its time.
But they're replacing it with another war-based comic, so...
This doesn't make sense to me at all. I actually am enjoying Red Lantern, which I thought was kind of interesting because he was just a side character from the war in Green Lantern. And he's managed to spin off into his own book. And it's actually kind of interesting because here is this creature who is it's actually Red Lanterns, I should say. It's all about the Red Lantern Corps, but the core of the story is actually about how do you say his name? Atrocicus, something like that.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, where he basically is doubting himself. And he's losing control of the Red Lanterns because he isn't sure what his mission is anymore. And so it's actually kind of an interesting book because here is a color that was basically probably the purest of all the colors. It's rage. You know what I mean? And it's very easy for them just to have a sole mission. And he's starting to doubt that. And he's actually starting to wake some of his other lanterns because all of his lanterns are artificially made dumb. to keep the rage, they're just turned into rage monsters, basically. And what he's basically been doing in the last few books is waking some of them up so that he has intelligent conversation with somebody. So it's actually kind of an interesting book. It's interesting where it's going. I don't know if it's quite made it there to be its own book, but it is interesting at least.
I'm liking some of the new Lantern stuff. I mean, the main Lantern book is really good. I'm really liking where that's going. I sort of like every alternate issue I like and dislike. The Core and New Guardians, like I'm liking them both at some times and disliking them at others. But I kind of like the Green Lantern universe. I kind of like the whole idea of the International Space Cops. So
no, I do too.
I say intergalactic space cops. So
I do too, and I love Lantern. But I got to tell you, Core only really interests me when Lafleeze is in it because I think he is the funniest character, the Orange Lantern of Avarice. Who has no other lanterns because he wants it all for himself.
Yeah.
I just think he is the funniest character.
He's great. No. There's some clever stuff they're doing with it, and I think, after the after effect of the movie, they're still struggling to sort of redefine, because they probably had plans to launch off from, you know, what they're going to do in the movie, but I think that they're redefining their identity, and... I think they're carving out a good niche, and the Green Lantern Corps is one of the cornerstones now of the new 52 DCU. It's one of the main sections now. So I think
your main sections are super books, Bat books, Green books, or Lantern books,
and Justice Leagues.
Oh, I was about to say, because the leagues, basically.
They do actually call that Justice League is a section, and they throw in things like Green Arrow gets thrown into there as well. And there's also the Dark section as well.
Yep.
And I think that there's... I have a feeling that there's like a Magic section as well.
I thought the Magics were included in the Dark now.
Perhaps they are included
because
you've actually got
Justice League Dark, you've got I Vampire, you've got Voodoo... they're all the slightly underworld characters.
Yeah.
I wonder where Suicide Squad fits in all that.
Dark.
Dark.
I think here we go. The section to Justice League, Batman, Superman, Green Lantern, Young Justice, the Edge and the Dark. Now the Edge includes things like All-Star Western, Deathstroke, Suicide Squad, Stormwatch, Grifter, Voodoo, OMAC, Blackhawks, and Men of War.
Oh, okay. Not a lot longer with OMAC.
So the Edge is about to lose OMAC and Blackhawks and Men of War.
Yeah, yeah. So those titles coming back in. Oh, no, because one of those is a super book.
One's a bat book.
One's a bat book, and one's the World's Finest, which has got Power Girl and Huntress, which is kind of a bat and super book.
Because, yeah, they've already included in here in this list. I'm looking. There will be, after the second wave hits, there will be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10, 11, 12 Bat books.
Good Lord.
Mm.
I think we're getting a little bit out of credit. Oh, the other thing I thought of, I can't remember if I talked about this last week. I think I hinted at it but then didn't get to it. The latest Birds of Prey. Is a fascinating little exercise.
It is, yeah.
The fact that they've all lost their memory.
Yeah, I love the start of that, and that there's something deeper going on. It was an issue that kept me on my toes, and I really appreciated it.
So I think Birds of Prey is actually taking a turn towards the better at this point. And I gotta say, I'm really liking Poison Ivy.
you know, she's making a good addition to the team. No, it's a good book. And given that it's no longer got its started this season back with a new writer.
Yep.
And
you've lost Oracle, which,
and we've lost Oracle, who's now off being Batgirl and has no interest whatsoever in joining the group.
Although, however, has been in the last two issues.
Yeah, so I think we'll see her more often than not. But
yeah, I think so too.
I think, you know, she's still finding her identity, and I like what they're doing with her in her book. That she's just completely lacking in self confidence.
I'm actually really enjoying Batgirl. I'm actually the two female books. I'm really enjoying Batgirl. I'm really enjoying Supergirl.
Yeah, but you're not enjoying Batwoman so much.
I don't like Batwoman. I don't know. Something about it does not click with me.
Well, I think we should move on, though, from what we've been reading.
You betcha, and I've got it right here. All right.
Okay, we're going to keep this brief because there's not a huge amount of movie news this week, because I think we're about a month away from everything hitting the fan.
All right, let's go to this really quickly. Dark Knight Rises. What are you saying? Spoilers confirmed? What?
Well, apparently there's an article that came out this week. There's a character that's been confirmed for the film, and it was from an unlikely source. And should we just say, well, the whole show is spoilers, but this is a spoiler within a spoiler.
Okay. So spoiler, everybody. Just be aware. This is a published article, though.
I haven't got my klaxon ready. But anyway, apparently there's a 12-year-old girl who's been cast in this. Her name's Joey King. And she's turned up in a few different things. She's got a little bit of credit. I'm just trying to – I'm not quite sure what other – role she's been in. I think she was one of the young girls, I think, in Crazy Stupid Love is what most people have seen. She was being interviewed about her role in The Dark Knight Rises, and she said, I can't give too much away because I promised Mr. Nolan I wouldn't say anything. There are too many secrets about the character in the movie. But she said that immediately after telling everyone that she's going to be playing a young Talia al Ghul.
Huh. So they're going to do a backstory on Talia, because it wasn't Marion Cotillard supposed to be playing?
Well, that's what hasn't been confirmed anyway whatsoever.
Right.
And so a lot of people assume that she'd be playing a young version, that she was playing the young Marion Cotillard, and in fact, you know, they would be the younger and older versions of the same character. So if that's true, then Talia al Ghul is going to be in the new film.
And it's interesting because they also say that she would be playing opposite Josh Pence, who's playing a young Ra's al Ghul in Flashback.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. So I'm still waiting for the day that we find out that Liam Neeson's making an appearance in this film.
Mm.
It's coming. I just have this funny feeling.
I just think that in the books, I think there's got to be a reason why that they've been emphasizing Deckard and you know, all that kind of aspect of Gotham.
I reckon Bane is something that's from Ra's al Ghul.
I agree, and I said that months ago, and I think that it's kind of like the champion he wanted to send to Gotham.
Yeah, and it failed with Bruce, and now
Bruce, exactly. Yeah. And it seems as though they're competing for Gotham's love in the trailers,
and they're bringing it full circle to conclude the series and everything. Anyway, I guarantee Liam Neeson's coming up.
Yes,
I'd be very surprised if he didn't. Even if it's only for 5 minutes, he'll be in this film.
Well, speaking of minor cameos.
Yes. Now, yeah, okay. I heard you say this in the head of the show. Let's break the headline.
Yeah, okay. The headline is actually has the most mind-blowing of possible Avengers cameos been revealed.
Okay. Now, according to your headline, you said Spider-Man be a cameo in the Avengers?
Yes.
And I call crap.
Yeah, I call crap on this one as well, but several news sites have actually picked this one up, so I couldn't ignore it.
I've got to say, I call crap for one reason. Studios don't share characters.
Studios don't share characters, and the comes from an interview with Jenny Agata, who was being interviewed for the Radio Times. And she said that she was sworn to secrecy and disclaimers, but she said that Spider-Man was on set of the Avengers in one of the things. Now, some people suspect that she just got it wrong.
Yeah, or what she witnessed was some kind of blooper or practical joke.
Yeah, exactly right.
Because there's a Spider-Man cameo in the behind the scenes of the X-Men. They were just,
that's right.
They were just pulling a practical joke.
Yeah.
So I call crap on this.
I call crap on this as well, but I do love the... I mean, studios don't like sharing, but I think as comic book geeks, if studios did realize how mutually beneficial it was to share their characters, we could have the greatest movie ever made.
Okay, what comes first? Avengers or Spider-Man?
Avengers comes first, I think.
Yeah, it would be in Sony's interest.
Yeah.
Because that would give a quick plug to a film that was coming out, what, about a month later?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Sony's that clever. But boy, would that be great?
You know? Look, if it did happen, it would be great. Look, I mean, I'd love to see a world harmony where Fox and Disney and Sony all come together and agree that, yeah, we can all use the kick. Because let's not forget that. Yeah, I know. You may say that I'm a dreamer.
Oh, great flaming arrows. What do you think?
Yeah. Let's just say Disney actually owns all these characters, owns the Marvel Universe, with the exception of
all the best characters,
ones that have been liked, all the good ones,
Marvel quite unceremoniously sheared off to make some money.
Yeah,
and look, it must just eat Disney up, because all they have to wait for is the studios not to make a film. Because if these studios don't make a film within a period of time, the rights revert.
Sony's going to be making... Well, this is why you got so many Spider-Man animated TV series.
No, we're not talking about TV, though. We're talking about film. We're talking about...
Is it the same? I thought it was just Sony Entertainment had to use them.
No. So they've got the big screen rights are the big screen rights. That's what we're talking about.
Okay, they're separate.
And they basically, every couple of years or whatever it is, they have to have a Spider-Man film in production or the rights revert, right? And the same with Fox. Fox actually has to, every so many years, has to have a Daredevil, a Fantastic Four, an X-Men film in production or the rights revert. And so this is why they're rebooting Daredevil. This is why they're rebooting Fantastic Four.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Anything to hold on to those rights. They don't even care if the films are good at this point. They've just got to get them out.
They should just get Roger Corman in then again.
Absolutely. He could turn them around in no time.
We could have five Fantastic Four films a year.
With bad animation and all.
Versus giant prawn.
And mega duck. All right. All right. So the last piece of news that we had in film and television, is the last piece? Yes, last piece of news we had in film and television was a few weeks back. We actually talked about the fact that a Powers TV series was in development by the FX channel. And MajorSpoilers.com once again has basically published a story that says that FX has dropped it. They've actually given up on it. Now, I know. According to the quote, it says...
Oops, sorry.
You're doing my trick now. I don't feel so bad now.
All I can say is...
He says, we didn't pick the pilot of Powers up. We went back and Chick Egli, who had written it, did a fairly substantial rewrite that would require pretty extensive reshoots of the pilot, said FX president and GM John Landgraf. Right now, we're in the process of deciding whether to pull the trigger on the reshoot, is basically their answer. Mm. Which I think is incredibly sad.
Yeah, look, I mean, I was looking forward to it because it's... It sort of screamed television series.
Oh, it did. And the point that Steven Schleicher, once again, who writes Major Spoilers on the morning stream this morning, actually said, this is a series that really isn't a special effects driven series. It's a detective show that just happens to be about superpowered people. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And the first season would be the Who Killed Retro Girl story arc, and there's very little in the way of superpowers in that.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. So, I mean, look, and one of the things we'll talk about, I guess, in when we get to Punisher, perhaps, is just how well the idea of just detectives in a superhero universe works generally. And it's just, I think it's a real shame that if this doesn't come up. And it's actually interesting because only a few months ago they were still talking about casting for Powers. And now suddenly the whole plug's been pulled. So yeah, I'm saddened.
I'm very saddened, and I just
can't go on, David, with the rest of the show.
Yes, you can, because okay, we have this.
Yes.
Okay. Now back. You're back. The only thing that really worries me now at this point is that we actually have a couple of other superhero television shows in the works. And I'm worried that this could be the beginning of a cascade effect that takes them all out of action. We're supposed to have the Hulk in development. We're supposed to have Jessica Jones. We're supposed to have Jessica Jones in development. We're supposed to have, what was it? There was another one. Help me out. You mentioned it last week.
Freeze is coming.
Arrow.
Oh, Arrow, of course. Yeah. How could I?
Great flaming arrows.
Great flaming arrows. So you mentioned that last week, and I'm just worried that this is going to cause a cascade where the studios start to get very nervous. You got to consider, forget Smallville for the moment, because Smallville was 10 years old and actually had some maturity to it in the sense of how long it had been running.
Yeah,
not maturity.
Exactly.
Not maturity as in it was mature. Definitely not.
No, it had a sense of longevity. It was established.
It was established. But if you think about the last couple of years, Heroes tanked. After its first season, and they milked it for another three.
Two or three.
And what was it? The Cape just died a horrible death.
I don't remember The Cape.
The Cape was last year, and it just died a horrible death completely. Nicholas really liked it, and it was like, oh, really? It's been canceled? How dare you? You know? So it's like, so I'm just a bit worried that television just doesn't get comic books.
No, except in animated form.
Except in animated forms, and except by DC.
Exactly. So basically, if DC's animating it and it's not Green Lantern...
And if it's not CG.
And it's not CG.
And it's produced, by Bruce Timm.
Yeah.
It's a very narrow field we're talking about.
So it's basically Batman the Animated Series and Justice League. They're a very thin sliver.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
We need to get onto our pick of the week. What do you think?
Let's do it.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
Yes, it is. All right, Richard. All right, so here we go. This week, our pick of the week is this new run of Daredevil. Sorry, I don't have a more attractive name for it, but it is just the... What did you refer to it? You referred to it as the stealth reboot of the Marvel...
Stealth reboot. Well, a lot of people are referring to it as the stealth reboot because Marvel have relaunched a whole bunch of titles from issue one, so it's not like a major New 52 type thing.
We should point out that Marvel...
there are a good half dozen titles of major characters that have new issue ones.
We should point out, though, that Marvel does this on a regular basis.
Yeah, they did do it a lot, but it seems that they've all sort of happened at the same time. And, you know, there's been a few new titles in there, like The Avenging Spider-Man and Daredevil's Changed Direction and Punisher's got a new title and Captain America's got a new number one and there's a new Moon Knight.
I've been doing
new things with Fantastic Four lately. So all that sort of stuff's all happened around the same time.
And I had a friend last night who actually is another comic book fan, and he was actually saying, so how many issues in do you think it'll be? See if this sounds familiar. How many issues in do you think it'll be until they resume numbering?
Well, it'd be interesting because... I was reading an article the other day about the most rebooted series in comics history. And Punisher was up there as one of the top one or two.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's true. But I was thinking when Thor...
Oh, like, you know how they do the 600 when they announced
Thor relaunched as a number one, this J. Michael Straczynski run. And they ran it for, I think it was 12 issues or 13 issues. And then the 14th issue was issue 600.
Well, Marvel seemed to catch on to the idea that they could have the best of both worlds by releasing things as the new numbering, but still then put out a big, you know, anniversary number as well. And they did this role, and I think with the Fantastic Four run, they actually did issues 1 to 11. Number 12 was issue 600, whatever it was.
And then they went back to the regular numbering
not long afterwards.
Is that what's going on? Because I was trying to find, because I heard that Fantastic Four had also done this reboot. So I was trying to find them, but all I could find was in the 600s, and I thought, did they? Did they reboot? I don't know.
It was weird. It was sort of weird. Yeah, I was trying to read it. Go to your friend Wikipedia. It'll help you out.
All right, not a problem. All right, let's talk about Daredevil for a minute. So this is the run that is currently running now.
Yeah,
I think the first issue actually has the title as Here Comes Daredevil.
Yes.
That,
which was the slogan of Daredevil for many years.
That's right. And this is written by Mark Waid and drawn by Paolo Rivera. Go with Rivera. That'll do. and this is a really interesting take on Daredevil. It's not dark. It's not Frank Miller in any way. Matt Murdock is actually kind of happy-go-lucky. He seems to have come out of whatever depression state he was in the run a couple of years ago, where he was basically going into some very dark places.
Well, can I just put this in context?
Yes.
Over the last couple of years, and I do refer to this a bit in the run, he's basically at this point, he was outed as Matt Murdock.
Yep.
And which he's still recovering from at this point. He's still, you know, trying to say, and there's a really interesting comment they make in the Amazing Spider-Man where he says, like, you know, a third of New York believes it, a third of New York's skeptical, and the rest of them are just interested in a Kardashian wedding.
Yes.
And then he says, but I told you that wouldn't last. he was possessed by a demon briefly.
I didn't know about the demon. I knew about the outing.
It was called Shadowlands. Was a run that just almost immediately preceded this,
right?
And he also before that he also took over. I think it's the Hood, the Cartel, the Hand. Sorry, briefly.
Huh.
Okay. So it was like they went through this run where he kind of like and he was trying to do it as a force for good,
right? Like, you know, right. But that's never going to work.
No, and so, like, he's been through the lowest of the low again. So, like, you know, and so, yeah, you're right. When they pick up this series, it's suddenly a Matt Murdock renewed.
Well, that's right, and he and we have comments from Foggy all the time, basically, like, you're just not quite you, are you? And he's on a health kick, and he's trying to get Foggy to lose weight. And
I sense a bit of foreboding with that, though.
With the losing of weight.
I think at the end of one of the issues, and this is a spoiler for it's like issue 2 or something, and it's like in the next issue, Foggy's heart bursts, and it doesn't.
Mm.
It picks up somewhere else.
Yeah,
but it's if that was anything, I just have a feeling that maybe something's going to happen to Foggy.
What I think is really interesting is that Murdock actually says to Foggy at one point, I can smell the junk food on you.
Yeah.
I think it's really, but so, and I love the fact that all the way through it, people go, oh, Matt Murdock's back in town. They go, what, Daredevil? They go, can you prove that?
It's just this issue. At the end of issue 3, they're in a bar and Foggy's coughing a lot, saying, oh, God, cough, cough, wait, what? And then he turns around and there's like the radar sense that says, next, Foggy's heart bursts. And then nothing ever happens in the next issue. Actually, I think that's a reference to, I just realized that was a reference to, I have the new girl who's kind of hot.
Right.
Says, I have six of them lined up. I have six new clients lined up already. And Foggy's just shocked by that. So there you go. That was my misreading.
I think it's a shock move, not that his heart actually
burst. I thought I wanted his heart to actually burst.
You wanted his heart to actually
burst. Yeah, because I thought that would have been a really dark. So it's like, yeah, happy girl, lucky Matt. And then Foggy drops dead.
Yeah, no, that's not going to work. That's not going to work.
The next issue, Murdoch's fighting tigers for some reason.
No, look. And that's kind of what the series is like, really.
Yeah, actually, I really like one of the things that I like that's running through this thing is she said it's this really lighthearted thing. He get this new woman starts working for them, and she's constantly trying to catch him out as Daredevil.
Yeah.
And Ken's constantly calling him Devil. He says, I'm not Daredevil. They do a crossover issue with The Amazing Spider-Man. Like, it was called Devils in the Details. And it was a two-part crossover with Spider-Man 677, I think it was, and Amazing Spider-Man 677 and Daredevil issue 8, I think.
Yeah.
It's
not just Spider-Man. It's also Black Cat, though, who I adore.
Yeah, I was going to say, that threesome would make a terrific book.
It would. And I love the fact that she keeps flirting with Murdock.
Yeah, and there's actually one scene where he's flirting with Murdock and she actually kisses him and it cuts to Spidey and he's like, this is where my supervillain career begins. This is my supervillain origin story, yes. I think he says.
And then, there's one point where he says, she's holding me and she goes, are you complaining? And Spider-Man just goes, oh, for God's sake.
Yeah. But what I really love is In that he is like he's desperately trying to convince this woman that he's not Daredevil, and then Spider-Man just swings in at one point going, "Hey, Daredevil!" But it still is Matt Murdock, and he goes, "Oh, sorry, I thought everybody knew at this point. I'm a bit confused over that."
And I love the fact that no courtroom will actually let him work, because as soon as he walks in the room, the prosecutor starts saying, "Well, you keep a secret that you're a Daredevil." So he's had to actually restructure his law firm so that now they coach people to defend themselves.
Which I think is quite cool.
Yeah, it's a very clever idea, you know? And I love there's that wonderful, beautiful... It's little details in this one I love, which is we've never really picked up on before. Things like he goes out the window. He actually hands to his secretary a package to be couriered.
Yes, yeah.
And then goes out the window. And in his thought bubbles, he's basically saying, I don't really have time to finesse this. My clothes go into a secret hiding place, but they're never there by the time I get back. The homeless have already raided it. And so when he gets back to his apartment, the package that he got his secretary to send is there, and it's a fresh suit.
Yeah.
And I just think that's genius. You know, that's...
No, it's very cool, and I think this is the difference between what we were saying 2 weeks ago when we were looking at the classic Daredevil things and just how different that writing is and how much stuff is unsaid and is implied and those little things that just pay off later as opposed to those earlier ones we were talking about where everything was spelt out for you. I really love the way they use the next, you know, next issue kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of like that's like almost like an extra little punchline and everything. So there's one where it's like he's taken another blind client. And
that's actually
like
a really good arc, that one.
That's a really good arc.
That's a really good arc. And I love the punchline in that, though, at the end when he comes back and he obviously knows, the blind guy knows that he is Daredevil.
Yeah.
And when somebody actually says something, he just says under his breath, he says, "Don't say a word." Yeah. To the blind guy.
Well, it's funny because they've got this one at the end of this one issue. It's got like, you know, they're both standing in the window. And like they've got, and Matt's saying to him, "It's going to be okay." And there's like, you know, a dozen laser pointed guns at him. And it's like, next, not exactly.
And then in the next issue, the cover is Daredevil with all those laser points on him.
Pointers on him, yeah. You know? So I love the way that they've kind of done that as well. I think that's a really nice.
Yeah, no, I love the fact that we brought back for one episode the character of the Claw. Who I haven't seen in years. I mean, he's such a dated, silly character that it's great we haven't seen him. But to bring it, they brought him back in a way that actually made him interesting.
Yeah, and I think, and the other thing that they're doing in here is planting seeds for this Amiga arc that's going to be coming up soon. I just such a well constructed book. I think it really is with all the new 52 stuff we've been reading, and despite my love of DC. I think this is one of the best books on the market at the moment.
I would say that, but I'm also going to throw in two other books into this mix because there's been three issues of Avenging Spider-Man published so far, and it's Avenging Spider-Man is phenomenal. It is
amazing.
Yeah, amazing. This is the best Spider book in some time.
Yeah, it
recaptures the sense of humor of Spider-Man.
It's funny. It's so funny.
Yeah, it's funny. The inclusion, it's basically a team-up book because he's teamed up with Red Hulk, who I didn't know anything about except we know the character, which is, of course, General Ross, now turned into a Hulk, who is a man who dedicated his life to chasing down the Hulk, who is now a Hulk, which is funny in its own right. But he's a Hulk with intelligence. He still has his mind. And his relationship with Spider-Man is hysterical. Because
that's great. I love there's this because towards the end of that run, it's kind of like Hulk turns to him and says, "Never ask me for a ride again."
Yes.
Like, okay. And then Iron Man's there. He's like, "Fire scan showing some pretty extensive injuries. You might have a concussion. Have you ever thought about a helmet?"
Oh, there's a great line too from Hulk himself. I'm going to see if I can find it while you're... Tell us more about what you thought of this book. I'm going to find this line because it just killed me. It broke me up.
There's the first major story arc that we've had in The Avenging Spider-Man. It's classic Spider-Man stuff, but it's kind of turned it all on its head because it, J. Jonah Jameson now seems to be the mayor of New York.
Yes. I don't know how that happened, but anyway.
I don't know how that happened either, but he's been elected mayor of New York. And one of the underdwelling mole people type things have kidnapped him, taken him underground, thinking that they've defeated Earth's major champion, and you know now that they can, you know, take over. And it turns out that underground, that is it just Mole Man? Is that the name of the character?
Mole Man, yeah, Mole Man. He's been around for years.
He's been around for years. He was, in fact, one of the first villains that, if not the first villain, that the Fantastic Four fought.
Yeah.
So iconic, in fact, that you might recall at the end of The Incredibles, the movie, which was inspired by Fantastic Four, there was a very clear reference to Mole Man at the end of that.
With the Underminer or whatever his
name is. The Underminer, yeah. And so, look, you know, but it turns out he's fallen from grace, and that these bulkier and more vicious creatures that live underground have taken over his throne, and now he's kind of living in fear in his own realm.
That's right.
And it was not just living in fear, he's living in shackles.
That's right.
And Spider-Man's down there to decides to help, you know, sort this thing out, but mainly to rescue J. Jonah. But he also decides to go back and during the course of this battle, Hulk's seemingly severely Red Hulk is seemingly severely injured.
I just found the line. It's following on from that. Hulk gets stabbed clean in the chest with a super sword, basically, and everybody thinks he's dead. And Hulk manages to get the sword out of his chest, and Spider-Man has gone on, and he's had to deal with all these underground people. Hulk shows up covered in his yellowy blood, and Spider-Man actually says, "How'd you survive, Hulk?" And the line I love is when he says, "You think this is a bloody tan? I'm a walking weaponized aggressive tumor. Healing tissue is not a problem. Now let's smash something."
I've always loved the J. Jonah Spider-Man relationship, but it's frustrated me constantly because you'd think it's at this point you're thinking, J. Jonah, how stupid are you? It's clear at this point Spider-Man is not anybody's enemy. Like, you know, if he's been swinging around for that long.
And they kind of justified J. Jonah a little bit in Alias by making him basically against all superheroes.
Exactly.
But he was never against the superheroes as much as he was Spider-Man.
But what I really like about this issue, his appearance in here, there's this real moment where Spider-Man sort of just says to him, "Look, I can't go. I can't leave that guy behind. I know it's stupid." And he goes, "But you're going to get killed in there." And he goes, "I don't care. You know that I'm not going to let him die. And you know all your bluster about me. You know that I'm not going to let anything bad happen."
Hmm.
And it's basically, and there's this moment where it's kind of like, he still makes a gruff comment, but it's a moment where J. Jonah, you realize that he, Jameson, does actually have some level of respect for what Spider-Man does.
Except when Spider-Man comes out of the hole after
all
is said and done, and Jonah Jameson says, "What, you? did this?"
What I love about that, just background to that, is Spider-Man's actually defeated the enemy by swinging around a sword and taking off the giant Goliath's pants, which ended up being an act of shame, which was defeat in their world. So when he comes back up and he says, "What, you're telling me you took care of the subterranean invasion without the Hulk's help?" "That's right. What, with your funny little jokes?" "Yeah, kind of."
And I love there's a line here where when Hulk wants to smash them all and he's made them calm down and basically got the truce, Spider-Man's answer to him, he goes, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, wait a minute, Red Bulls."
There's one moment, actually, get back to Daredevil for a moment. It was either in the Daredevil issue or in the Amazing Spider-Man issue. There's a scene with Black Widow, and I thought you'd like this because I made a note of it. There's a scene with Black Cat and Daredevil where they're sort of surrounded by lasers. And he just says, "Lasers." She says, "Lasers, how disappointing." The old school thing says, "Still effective. You go north, I'll go south. We'll reconnect." And then Daredevil thinks, "Welcome timing. One of us was about to make a Billy Club joke."
That's right.
30 feet of nylon cord.
30
David.
Feet of nylon cord. Now, the other book I wanted to talk about really quickly, because you were talking about Daredevil being one of the best books around at the moment. The other book that is actually really, really good is Punisher.
You know, I'm so surprised at how good it is.
It's really dark. It's really well put together.
And you know what? Barely any Punisher in it.
No, it's really old school Punisher, though. It's people trying, you know, the killings happen, and it's the police trying to find out what's going on, and the Punisher working behind the scenes. But we've also got this side story running of this returned Marine.
Yeah.
Who lost her family, and she's basically laying in bed, obviously thinking of vengeance herself. It's a really good book and well worth having a look at, because this is old school Punisher.
Can I ask you a question, David? Did you think that those two cops are a tiny bit inspired by Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt from Seven?
I think there's a little bit more than tiny.
Yeah.
I think they are very much inspired by Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman.
They're great, though, aren't they?
They're great, and I'm not complaining. And I mean, the highlight for me, I think, in this book is actually in issue, I want to say, eight? What are we up to? One, two, three, seven. It's either six or seven at the ski lodge.
Yeah, that's if it's what I'm thinking of. I think it's six.
It's six. Yeah, that is amazing. It's such a well put together sequence, and I also love Punisher's relationship with that kid.
That's really good.
And the conclusion to that as well, and I think that's going to come back. I think there's more to that.
Well, because the kid feels ripped off that he's not.
Yeah, because he thinks he's a hero. And yeah. When he sees him with he sees the spray paint and he sees the skull and he goes, "You're not a hero." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And storms off.
This is an interesting thing that comes up as well. They've really emphasized in this issue the fact that half the police force wants to give him a medal and the other half never wants to run into him because they never have to make the awkward decision whether or not to turn him in or to go head to head with him or what to do, because technically he is an outlaw.
Then you've got that one cop who just wants to bring him in.
Yeah, and he no one can. He's the one that's sort of based on Morgan Freeman. No one can kind of figure him out entirely, including his partner.
Yeah, and there's that one clip in the car where he's opening and closing the switchblade.
Yeah,
and he counts a number, and the guy says, "Is that how many times you've opened and closed that?" And he goes, "No, that's how many dead bodies there are at the moment." You know,
I was really impressed because I've read lots of different runs of Punisher over the years, and I've always loved the stuff that Garth Ennis was doing. And I got a little bored of that run after, because he really emphasized the humor aspects of it, the really over the top. He basically figured if you're going to do a character that goes around killing people, you know, on a monthly basis, you have to let it take itself, you know, a little bit tongue in cheek. The downside to that, of course, is that it's also a very serious thing, going around killing people once.
But the interesting thing is, after seven issues, this book isn't funny.
This book isn't funny at all.
No, and the other thing I really like about this is that they're also, yes, he's got the whole spray painted skull like in the movies and all this sort of stuff on him, and he's kind of rough around the edges. But I love the fact that they're still within continuity. They show a couple of flashback panels, and he's in the older costume that looks like a superhero costume.
Yeah.
So they're saying, yeah, he was that. Now he's this. You know, and now he's become a whole lot more brutal.
And I think there's we're leading to something where he's going to go over the deep end more so. You know,
I can see crossovers to this book with people like Captain America.
Yeah,
we've had conflict between Punisher and Captain America before in Civil War.
Yep.
A couple years ago, and that wasn't pretty, and I think I can see that happening again in this new kind of stealthily rebooted Marvel universe. I can see Daredevil and Punisher. They've already alluded to it in one issue.
Yep.
So I can see that happening.
Sure, there's a flashback sequence where Daredevil wanted to bring in the perp and Punisher wanted to just kill him right then and there. And Daredevil won out on the day. But
didn't win out overall.
No, that's right.
I'm thinking. Look, in summary, I think we can say that Marvel at the moment has got the juice. At the moment, let me tell you, they've got what is it that we've read so far? Three excellently rebooted books. One I'm not so sure about at this point, which is Ghost Rider, and I still haven't read Moon Knight yet.
No.
So I'm curious to see Moon Knight, and I'm also curious about this four-part X-Men, what's it called? X-Men Avengers Extension. Extension. That's right.
Yeah.
Avengers Extension. I'm very curious about that because there's a preview of it in one of the Daredevils.
Right.
Oh, was it Daredevil or Spider-Man? No, Spider-Man. There's a preview, Spider-Man, preview in the Spider-Man. And it looks really good. It looks very movie, but it looks really good.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Oh, wasn't there a comment? What was it? Oh, Ghost Rider. There's actually a cameo in the Ghost Rider series from Hawkeye.
It was, and he looked very much like Jeremy Renner.
And Johnny Blaze actually says, "Digging the new threads, man."
And then at the end, he's like, "I lied. I'm still the jury's still out on them."
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of funny. Anyway, overall, I think it's actually a good run at the moment. I'm curious to keep up with it.
And you know what? I think it's great. I think we're at a point where both DC and Marvel are doing such interesting things that I'm just enjoying reading comics at the moment. I'm still a DC boy, but I think it's very easy to not fall into either the DC or Marvel camp and just to enjoy really good comics.
And that's the thing. I don't think you need to be a fanboy. I think you can read both worlds and enjoy both worlds. There's a lot to be said in both worlds at the moment. There are some downsides to the DC New 52, but where the New 52 rings true, it's really good.
Mm.
So, and I think that's the most important issue to remember, is that where it's right, you get stuff like the last issue of Batman.
Yes.
Which is sensational. And you get Aquaman.
Yeah.
You know, so, although they kind of finished the story arc on Aquaman now, I don't know where they're going.
Yeah, no, it doesn't seem to be quite as strong as where it started.
No, the honeymoon could be over.
We might be back to old school.
Yeah, I hope not, but the honeymoon could be over. We'll see you in the next issue.
But I think there's enough cachet now for me to actually like the character.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's all I needed. I think we all want to like Aquaman.
Yeah.
All we needed was a reason to, and the first few issues gave us a reason to like him, and now we can just enjoy his adventures.
Yeah, we can enjoy him in Justice. He doesn't feel like the minor character in Justice League.
No.
He now feels like he can hold his own.
Exactly right.
So there you go. All right, well, Richard, I think that's it. I think that's a show.
I'm saddened.
Yeah, it's a show. We're we're over time again, as always. Don't you have an awe? I thought you would have an awe.
I probably have an awe. I've got...
and of course I've got
it's really dark in here.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Richard, where can people find out more about you?
People can find me on the interwebs at therealbits.com. That's the RELLBITS.com. You can link out to all of my stuff from there, including Twitter, which is one of my major forms of outlet-y talky stuff, which is me at DVD Bits.
Fantastic. And you can find out more about me by going over to geekactually.com. There's a big follow us button. Just click on that and you'll find my email address. You'll find my Twitter page, my Facebook page, everything. It's all there. That's the easiest way to find me. If you want to find me on Twitter, though, I'm at David McVeigh. Now, have we selected a book for next week?
We haven't.
Oh, my God. How could we not select a book for next week?
So let's just spin the giant wheel. That's right, people. We have a giant wheel.
Giant wheel it up. Let's go.
And let's just pick a classic. Let's go back and pick a classic. Let's go. Look, you know, we've been talking about Punisher.
Yeah.
We've been talking about Garth Ennis. Let's do that.
Okay.
Let's do Punisher, Welcome Back, Frank.
All right.
It's a 12-issue maxi series.
Cool. All right. That sounds good. That sounds like a plan. Punisher, Welcome Back, Frank is our book for next week. So everybody rush out and try and read it. And we also have to do at some point, you know, Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe.
Yes, it's true.
We do have to do this at some point.
We could do that instead.
Well, we could.
We could do a Punisher special. If you feel up to reading Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe next week as
Punisher
well.
Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe is a quick read. And it's a lot of fun. So you might want to read that as a supplemental. We might touch on that if we have time.
I think so.
It's worth having a look at. it's very odd. Anyway, that's it. I think we're done.
Thank God.
You make it sound so enthusiastic. We should just put out a couple...
How's that?
Very nice. We should put out a couple shameless plugs.
Yes.
That we have another show, which is, of course, is Film Actually, where we review films, and we're just as insightful there, just about movies.
Yes? Yeah, so if you enjoyed this, you'll probably enjoy that just as much. If you didn't enjoy this...
You might like that better.
You might like it better.
There you go.
Or it's possible that you haven't made it this far.
Yeah, well, that's possible too. But we should also mention that we've also just launched a new show, which is actually part of Film Actually. With Film Actually, we always had a news section, but the show was getting too long. And so we decided to spin the news out into its own little show, which we basically say loud, fast, and under 30 minutes or your money back. It's Film Actually News, and you can find that on the Film Actually feed as well, which is always a little bit of fun. So the first issue for that is going up this week. So check that. No, sorry, that went up last week. Second issue's up this week. Yeah. All right, so check that out as well. And Richard, I'll see you next week.
I'll see you then.
See you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.